Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this XAML versus HTML fight. It's going to be a very special session, we think. I think we're going to break the world record in slides and demos in 75 minutes. More on that in just a second. Let me first introduce your presenting duo. So my name is Gilles Kleren. I'm going to be defending the XAML technology here in our little cage fight. So I'm coming from Belgium, working as a .NET architect at Ordina Belgium. Also regional director and client dev MVP. I'm not going to waste time on who I am. So this is Kevin. Let Kevin introduce himself as well.
Hi, I'm Mr. HTML. And as you can see, I already are in the disadvantage of using two different mics. But that should be okay as well. I work at the Technical University of West Flanders, to be more specific in the new media and communications technology. And at the bottom, you will also find some stuff if you can, if you want to poke me afterwards.
All right. So how are we going to do things today? So as mentioned, it's going to be a fight between two technologies. We're going to try not to do a physical fight. Let's hope that that's not going to be where we end up. So Windows 8, so XAML versus HTML. For XAML, we're going to use some Windows 8, some Silverlight. For HTML, I think we're going to use HTML, I think. And the goal is actually giving you an overview of what each technology can or cannot do. So we're actually going to have 10 topics and see how each technology solves that particular problem. We actually have 10 problems, two technologies. So we count about 60 minutes. That's 20 topics each 3 minutes. So it's going to be a very high-level overview of each solution to a specific problem. And we want to get you involved. So we actually didn't make the decision on which technology is better, because then it's going to be XAML for me and HTML for him. So we're going to let you decide. So it's basically going to be a small raise of hands after each round. And we're not going to do an actual count, but see how many people are actually raising their hand for each of the technologies. And at the end of this battle, we're going to end up with hopefully a winner or a draw. It could be, because we have 10 rounds planned. We also want to make it quite strict. We have a timer over here, which is going to do a count for 3 minutes for every round per person. All right. So what are the rounds? So as mentioned, it's going to be very fast. Fasten your seatbelts. We have too many slides, I think, and too many demos for this small 75 minutes. What are going to be the rounds that we're going to cover? Layout, styling. Drawing, local data, service access, data binding, audio and video playback, access to controls, object orientation, and we're going to finish off. If we have time, we can also skip round 10 if necessary. We're going to do unit testing. So it's going to be very fast, lots of topics in these 75 minutes. So without further ado, let's get started with round one. Round one is layout. How is layout solved in the two technologies? And with each round, we're going to do a little overview of some requirements that we want to try and cover with the particular for each technology. So what is required in terms of layout? Make it possible to have a responsive UI in resolution independence, and also have a layout management system built in so that you don't have to do everything from scratch. All right, I'm going to start with XAML, and you can start my 3 minutes. So in XAML, basically, layout is done through a layout system built on a number of layout elements, such as the grid, the stack panel, and the canvas. Those are built-in elements that we can use in almost every XAML technology, be that Windows 8, be that Silverlight, be that Windows Phone. Each technology also has a number of specific XAML layout controls. For example, Silverlight has the dock panel, has the wrap panel available. Windows 8 also has a number of specific controls, such as the grid view, the list view, and the semantic zoom. And Windows Phone 8 also now inherited some of these controls as well. So you see that we have that layout system. So that's one requirement already filled in. Now, how do the controls actually work? Well, they're very simple. The canvas in XAML is, a canvas. It's a drawing panel on which you put controls, basically with position-based or pixel-based positioning. You give some left and some top spacing for all these controls. So basically, the canvas in XAML is nothing more than the WinForms, actually. The stack panel is also a very simple control in XAML. It basically allows you to stack controls. It is already a bit of a responsive control. It allows you to resize the controls, its children, based on the available space. But still, the stack panel is not enough to fill to build up an entire UI. If we do need a full responsive UI, then we actually have to use the grid. In XAML, the grid is a very powerful control, allowing you to build a responsive UI. No matter how big the resolution, no matter how big the screen size physically is, you can actually do it with the grid. How do you use a grid? Well, it's very simple. You define a number of columns and you define a number of rows, and then you start putting in the children or the child controls inside of that grid. So basically, the grid is like a table. It is not meant as a data table. It's really a layout control, which is, it is not the same as a table in HTML. As mentioned, each technology in XAML has some layout-specific controls. So for example, Windows 8 has the list view, the grid view, the semantic zoom, which are all controls which are touch-optimized. All right, let me go quickly to a very first demo. So I'm going to show you how the grid, the layout manager, the grid, is actually making it possible to build a full-page layout. So this is actually a grid which is filling the entire page. No matter how big the resolution or the screen physically is, it will always stretch to fill the entire screen. So that's actually what we want. So XAML is really fulfilling my requirements. So very quick, an overview of the code here. So we have the grid. Inside of the grid, we have a number of rows and columns defined. And then in each of these cells, I'm placing a number of one image based on a number of on the ID of the row and the column. So XAML really fulfills the promise and the requirement of having a layout system that is resolution independent. Up to Kevin for HTML.
Okay. I'm already going to start, so give me a little bit more time finding his 3 minutes. Okay, so HTML. Well, basically, if you want to do... Oh, we forgot to put it on six.
There we go.
Okay. So HTML. So basically, what it's done is you're going to use a combination of, first of all, HTML elements and combined with CSS styles. So you're never going to style things with BRs and P tags. Of course, that's the ideal world. And each element has its own specific meaning, so except for the div, which has no meaning at all, you can find it out. And of course, there are some things that you need to do for browser issues too, but I'm not going to focus on this, otherwise I need an hour. And HTML is the hardest part. But the good thing is, instead of using different controls, you can always start with the display property. And the display property has several options that you can use. So there's an example of display block, which I'm going to show you in a minute. But more important is the flex, which you can use. Again, that's something that is not implemented in the older browsers, but you will see that it will work in my case. There's just one thing that you should do, never do, and that is for layout purposes, use tables. So hopefully, can you hear me? Okay, super. So what did I do? I already created the page. And basically, this is the HTML that I created. So what you have here is something like Gilles already told, it's like a stack panel to stack things next to each other. And I can achieve this by using the display. If I would set the display element to block, then you will think of an invisible break before and after your image. So you will have the stack panel vertical. If you want to have them in line, you just have to put away the breaks, and then things will be placed next to each other. When your screen gets smaller, then of course it will take two rows, three rows, and so on. If you want to create a table, well, what you see here is that I have a bunch of divs, div with a class title, with a class row. So I have three rows, and I'm going to use a row span. Some magic CSS, so display table. I want to create rows, I want to create cells. And then I can, for example, create things like this. So that is a little bit like the grid. Now I can take this a step further too with the flexbox. For example, what you see here is I have three buttons next to each other. I can change them into a column. So when we change the flex flow to a column, we can change that as well. We can specify where they should be placed at the end, at the beginning. And like the grid, you can also, for example, say that the first div, in this case the A, should be, let's say, 10 times as big as the other ones. So let's make it 2 times, which is a little bit more clear, which should normally work. That there goes my score. is a div. If I have time, I will show it here. This is my implementation, which is better. So the div of A should be 2 times as big as the other one. So this is where you can see it. This takes half of the grid. So this is a bit like the star that you have in the XAML grid.
Oh, cool. All right. So we do need a small raise of hands. Who thinks that the layout in XAML is better implemented? Kevin, also follow. Layout in XAML? Layout in CSS and in HTML? I think XAML is the clear winner. Can you put a little line with the XAML? Thank you.
Okay, let's move to... No. Okay, take the mic. Do know that I'm using a mic, and Gilles has the advantage of a mic on his hand. So Don't start.
I'm not starting yet. Don't worry.
Okay, managing styles. Well, the idea here is that when you have a big application, whether it's a web, whether it's a Windows 8 or whatever application, is that you need to have a way to work with your styles. And the example that we're trying to do here is, how are you going to use variables in your styles? Because you want to reuse some of the features.
Go.
Check. So basically, styles in HTML, that's pretty easy. Doesn't exist. You have to use CSS. And by default, there is no easy way to do that. But before you're going to give XAML the score again, there are solutions. You can use CSS precompilers like Sass, Less, Stylus, or CSS Crush. I'm only going to explain Less, but the idea of Sass and all the other ones are exactly the same. So back here, what did I do? I already created a demo file by right-clicking at, you know the drill, a Less style sheet. And then I'm going to open up the Less file. And basically what you see is that on the left, you have Less code. On the right, you have CSS code. And the thing is, every time that I save, he's going to change that Less code into CSS. Now, because the left side is normal CSS, yeah, basically that's simple. If you compile normal CSS into CSS, it still saves CSS. But I can make it a little bit more toolbox. Make some space. I can, for example, work with variables. So what I did is I created a variable at the top, starting with the at sign. And what I can do right now is, and do notice that TechDays caller is now has IntelliSense. By the way, does XAML have that? No, I think so. So I can have the TechDays caller here as well. So when we save this, you will see that the colors are changed into orange. Now, we can take this a step further. Let's say that we want to nest elements. What do I mean with this? Normally, you have to write a site. In the site, you have a navigation and so on. Now, I can make this a lot easier. Remember all these styles that are scattered in your style sheet? Well, now you can combine them. This is the nav that sits in the site. In the nav, you have a UL. Under the UL, you have an li, and I can hover over an li. So save that, and you will see that he's going to generate this code for us, which makes it a lot easier. By the way, I can also text decoration is good. We can also use mixins. How many times you have to write that same CSS code over and over again? Well, I can create a sort of function like this in CSS, and I can just execute that function. For example, I can say that the UL should have rounded corners, like so, save. And then you will see that my function is executed. I can also pass some parameters, for example, 40 pixels. 70 pixels, save that again, and then these pixels are applied as well. If we, for example, quickly take a look at 20 seconds, plenty of time. Styles, run that application. If you, for example, take the comparison with Less, you see Less is exactly the same. Instead of working with at signs, you use dollar signs. I can use mixins. I can do pluses, minuses. I can divide stuff. I can do some more with mixins as well.
Time's up. All right. Switch the screen, please. All right, so that was the HTML implementation. Let's take a look at the XAML implementation for styling. So I think CSS really has a cool way of doing styles, but XAML also has built in a styling platform. Basically, we use styles just in the way as we did in CSS. It's basically also a simple place, one location, one place in your code where you create your, or where you group all your UI related properties and you can change them from there. The style in CSS, style in XAML is implemented a bit differently than in CSS. You can see a style on here, and it has a target type and a key. The key is basically the identifier. The target type, however, is a bit special. For example, here we have a rectangle, and we can only apply setters, basically applying a value, when on the type that you have defined as the target type. So you cannot simply specify just any property. Only the properties which are available on that type can be used here. It is different in a way that CSS is cascading. XAML doesn't know cascading style sheets. That's a bit of a pity, sometimes, sometimes not. What we do have, however, is the opportunity to make styles inherit from each other. It's possible to create a base style, like you see here, a base control style. For example, you specify the font phase on that. And then on the inheriting styles, you can identify other properties, such as the font size and other things. So it's not really a hierarchy of styles, but it is somehow implemented as well in XAML. To have variables in styles, we it's implemented entirely different, but it is possible to make styles a bit dynamic in XAML as well. This, by the way, only works in Silverlight, what I'm going to show you. Let me show it in the diagram here. It is possible to create an object, really a code object, create a style that is data-bound onto that object, and when that the values of that object change, that actually will update all the views that are using that style on the fly. So basically, it's a dynamic style available in Silverlight. It doesn't work in Windows 8 though. Let me show you that very quickly. Let's first run the demo. I have 1 minute, don't worry. So we're going to run a Silverlight application here. And I'm going to click on this button, and this is going to dynamically generate a new style, or dynamically switch between two styles, or basically update the style on the fly. How did we do that? Well, through the platform of data binding. It is possible to use data binding in styles. So this is my object, color setter, which has two properties of type solid color brush defined. And I have also a method called change colors. What I'm going to do is in my style definition, I'm going to, in here in my styles, I'm going to data bind the values of the style of the style properties to a value of that object, to brush one and brush two. When I then change the values by clicking on that button, I'm going to automatically update my style. So it is actually possible to use data binding, not really variables, data binding inside of my styles. I gained 5 seconds.
Yep.
There we go. All right, so in for the votes, who is in favor of HTML first? I think that's the clear winner, yeah. We do have to do the votes for XAML as well. XAML, yeah, that's a clear winner. All right. The score is a draw again, so again at 1-1. All right. So, can you put yourself near the timer again, because my turn to start. All right. Next round, round three. Round three is about drawing, the ability to draw items, and the ability to actually make it possible to do that vector-based. So again, the resolution independence is what we're going to try to achieve in here. All right, let's start the time. So XAML is really, this is a very easy requirement for XAML, because everything in XAML is vector-based. Out of the box, the drawing is available, all drawings that you make, all controls are vector-based. You can enlarge them as much as you want, they will always stay sharp without any problems. Drawing in XAML is based on a system of hierarchy, hierarchy based on shapes. So you have a base shape class, and all kinds of other basic shapes that inherit from that, like a rectangle, an ellipse, a polygon, a polyline, and so on and so forth. The shape also adds a couple of basic properties onto all shapes, like the fill, the opacity, the stroke, and so on. You can have all kinds of fills inside of XAML. You can have a solid color brush, which is actually a full plane color. You can have linear gradients, radial gradients. You can also have image brushes, which allow you to fill with an image. And you can even have something like the video brush. It's not very commonly used, but it is possible, for example, in Silverlight to actually paint with a video. All right, so let me show that in a demo. Oh no, I'm first going to show you this. If you want to move off the even path, you can also go into more complex shapes. So for example, a geometry, which is this complex shape here. You will not do that by hand. You will use a tool for that. For example, Expression Blend allows you to make these drawings very easily. Let me go to my demo. And now I have to open this because I have to switch. There we go. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you a smiley face drawing, and we're going to enlarge that by clicking on a couple of buttons. Let's run the demo first. Plenty of time. So I'm going to enlarge this smiley face here. By the way, this is drawn entirely vector-based. You can see as much as I make it bigger, it will still remain sharp because this is all vector-based drawings that we see here. You can also, of course, because of this, make animations really easy because everything is vector-based. It really redraws on the fly, no pixels, no pixelation problems whatsoever. So how is this done? Well, for this, I am actually using a couple of those shapes, like the ellipse, as you see here. And then the mouth of that smiley face was actually drawn using a path, which has a complex way of expressing how it should be drawn. That's because you do this with Expression Blend. You don't want to do this by hand. And when I click on these buttons, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use this scale transform here, which is originally at a scale of 1:1. I'm going to change the scale. For example, I'm going to scale it 3 times, 10 times, and so on, and everything remains sharp. No problem fulfilling this requirement in XAML. I'm done. Switch to number 6. Yes.
Okay, so drawing in HTML. Well, there you have several options. First of all, you can work with vectors as well, as what Gilles Thun and XAML. But most of the people will know the canvas. You can also use WebGL to, for example, work with an Ocular or something in your browser. Or you can use the plain old JavaScript, which works as well. If you dare to do it, you can also do it in CSS 3D. So with the canvas, the canvas is requires you to write a lot of JavaScript code, but it's fast. It renders really quickly. But it's a bitmap area, which means that it's not really that scalable. But you can use SVG, on the other hand, which is sometimes it's a little bit slower, sometimes it's a little bit faster there as well. It depends on what you're doing. And then this is pretty much the same as an XAML. You can create ellipses, rectangles, lines, whatever you want. And yeah, I'm not going to talk too much about these slides. I really want to show you the demo. So that's 2 seconds. Okay, I have this here. So with the canvas, you start very easily. You say that I want to have a thing on my page where I want to make a drawing. And I also made a smiley face. Not yellow, but that's the same. So basically what you do is you grab the canvas, you grab the context, and then you start drawing things. Again, this is JavaScript. You're going to use a tool for this that makes it easier. I can add a little bit more love as well. So if you want to work with these curling paths. But the cool thing is that you can also access each pixel individually. So I can run over each pixel and, for example, say I want to show the red colors and so on and so on. A cool example of this is like that. So for example, show me all this greenish colors on that page. Another example of the canvas is, this is more calculation. I'm going to just, come on, pixels. This is a lot of calculation. You see that it goes quite fast. Where's the mouse? When we take a look at SVG, as I said, you can, like in XAML, you can write the code, which is scalar. Again, this is not something that you want to type. Gilles talked about blends. I'm going to use an open source tool here, for example, make a unicorn out of it. Save it. Yeah, I could do, no, never mind.
Don't do it in the wrong
there you go. And you see that my SVG is automatically changed as well. So open, changing that in the tool. With JavaScript, I have something else here. It's written in JavaScript, and you need to hide from all the other ostriches. Come on, ostrich, come on. I have sound as well. This is too late. Oh, no. And if we could manage in time, then he's going to win, and he's going to start dancing. Oh, I missed it. Oh, I lost. Okay, come on. I have 25 seconds.
You already lost.
No, I didn't lose. Whatever. Okay. So you see, this is done with JavaScript. Normally, he would do a, how do you call it again? The thing? Yeah, whatever. A specific dance, the lambada or something like that. But that's okay. So you have plenty of options to do so.
All right. All right. You do the voting?
Yes. So how many in favor of XAML? How many of HTML?
Win.
Okay, the next one, which is local data. So basically what you want to have is, while everybody's writing code that should be running on the client side, of course it is better to store your data on the client side. So let's start with HTML. There you go. And in HTML, you have several options to store things on the client side. I'm not going to explain cookies because basically they need to be carried to the server side. You can do some client side stuff with them as well. But focus on the more interesting part, which is, first of all, web storage, IndexedDB, and WebSQL. So web storage is basically you can store one JavaScript object on the client really fast and get them really fast as well. The cool thing about this is that when you store JavaScript on the client and you're going to talk to it with JavaScript, you don't need to convert it. They're talking the same language. The difference between the two is the session is only for that window or the tab in the window, and local storage is pretty much across multiple browsers as well. IndexedDB, while local data and session storage is good for small amounts of data, IndexedDB is better for large amounts of data, again with JavaScript. Now, the difference between normal database systems is that this is transactional, not relational. So this is quite a different way of saving your code. But you can boost performance by using indexes as well. If you take a no code. I'm going to show you code in a minute. WebSQL, it is possible in each browser, but it's not supported. It is not a standard. But you can use it in each browser. This is because Google uses it very intensively, so each browser needs to support it. Demo time. So let me open up this one here, local data index, run it. And the code for local storage and session storage is very simple. And so what you're going to do is you're going to create an object, for example, Gilles Connery. And then we're going to store our new James Bond in the session. Save in session, we get it from the session. How do you get it from the session? Just session storage.getItem. If we test this on another page, get in session, Gilles Connery is still available. When we go back, we can do the same here, Kevin. Connery in the local storage, get it. We have Kevin Connery, test it on another page, take that page, go into a new browser, paste it, run it, get it from session. Ah, sorry, that was a tricky. We need to change that to local storage, get it from session. You see that Kevin Connery is still available. Session not, because it's another browser. When we go back to this page, where are you? Nope, this one here. How much time? 30 seconds. Ooh, very fast, very fast. Open that one. I'm going to do this in Chrome, just because Chrome has a really cool viewer for that, F12. I'm going to add blah, 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 which is 8. Save it, and you will see that this is stored in what they call the IndexedDB. When we take a look at the code, 10 seconds, it's pretty much simple. What you do is you create a database, you set up a transaction, and the only thing that you need to do is you need to add a new object, JavaScript object, in the database.
Time's up. Just in time. All right. Switching back to number one. All right. Let's go. Yeah. All right. So in XAML, things are pretty powerful when it comes to saving data. Again, this is dependent on the technology slightly because, of course, Silverlight is an in-browser technology. Windows 8, Windows Phone are, of course, client-side applications. I'm not going to talk about WPF because basically that does everything that you can. It can access a database whatsoever. So local data in Silverlight first. So Silverlight and Windows Phone originally use a system of isolated storage. Basically, isolated storage is a small file system to which each application can store whatever data it wants. It's simply a little file system, create folders, create files, that can be XML files, it can be image files, it can be everything that you want. So how does this work? Well, this isolated storage is a class that you access. You ask for the get user store for application. That gives you access to that little file system. The file system is associated with the application, so there's no security risks whatsoever. So you cannot go out and ask for to access the isolated storage for another application. So you can store all kinds of files in there. You can also store settings in there. It's also really easy to store a dictionary. I think that's the next slide. Yeah, there we go. So isolated storage settings are a dictionary of settings, key value, that can be serialized and deserialized on the fly. So basically what the local storage did, we can on top of that do files and more things, actually. In Windows 8, this is a bit different. It has the API called the Application Data API. The Application Data API is more powerful than isolated storage, but it follows the same principles. It is also a file system for the application only accessible for that application. It's a bit different in that there are different ways to work with it. You can access a local folder on the system that can be that can contain files or settings as well. You can also use the so-called roaming application data API. And the roaming application data API allows you to synchronize settings between devices without actually having to write any different code. It will automatically sync over OneDrive and make those settings or storage files available on other devices. And then you also have the temporary, which will be deleted by the system. Let me show you a couple of demos here. I'm going to show you one demo. I think I have time for one demo. Yeah. So I'm going to show it in Silverlight. So Silverlight is in browser. So that this allows me to write something to a text file. So I hope you can read this. So it's actually writing that to a text file. And I can also read that out, read the daytime, the current daytime from that text file. In Silverlight, this is this is quotat, meaning that each application can only access a number of megabytes by default. If you want more, you can ask the user to do so. So in code, this is really simple, a very simple API. Isolated storage file.get user store for application, and from there you can create files, and read settings as well. Just in time. Woo! All right. Okay. The votes for HTML first. The votes for XAML, that's a clear winner for XAML.
Clear?
Yeah, much clearer, very clear. All right. We're still equal, I think, no?
Yeah, if you
call
that clear.
Yeah, I call that clear. All right. Services. We're talking about client-side technologies. So, are you getting angry?
Yes.
Okay. We're talking about client-side technologies. That means that those applications, those client-side applications, need access to data. The data cannot be local. It can be local, like we saw in the previous demo. But if you need access to up-to-date data, relational data, how are you going to do that? Well, the answer is simple. It's going to be services. So the requirements for this round is make it possible to access services, to access a database that sits behind a some web service, and make it possible to use RESTful services, so REST-based APIs. And we're going to start with XAML. There we go. Oh, well, I'm already at 3 seconds. That's not good. So services in XAML are pretty much implemented in the same way in all kinds of technologies that use XAML. Silverlight, Windows 8, Windows Phone can access a number of service technologies. Of course, they cannot talk with a local database. They need access to a remote database, which has to sit behind some service. So the protocols that they can communicate with, like I said, are pretty much the same across all technologies. So WCF, ASMX services, REST services, OData services, socket services are all addressable from these client-side technologies. One common pattern, no matter what technology you're using, is that the service access will have to be asynchronous. So in Silverlight, this is done using a system of callbacks. Starting with Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8, we can use the await async pattern courtesy of C# 5. I'm not talking about WPF, because that, of course, can access a local database as well. So another requirement was service access. In .NET, in Windows 8, we can actually use the HTTP client, which replaces the web client, which we still used in Silverlight and regular .NET. And the HTTP client is a simple class that allows you to talk with a RESTful service. It has methods such as the get async, the put async, post async, and delete async, so fully RESTful services are supported. Once you get in the response, things are very simple. Link to XML when the response is in XML. JSON.NET or the data contract JSON serializer or the JSON object if the response is coming in the form of JSON. All right, so let's take a look at a small demo. I think I have it open here already. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to talk with Flickr. So the Flickr API, I assume most of you know Flickr. It's a big photo sharing website. And they have a huge API on top of their services that partly talks in XML and partly talks in JSON. So I'm going to search Flickr for some images about the Netherlands. I'm going to do it in Dutch, Netherlands. There we go. Did I type it correctly? Yeah. So there we go. So we got in some images from Flickr based on the response that came in as XML. So how did we do this? So for this, I'm using the HTTP client. The HTTP client defines a simple get async that I pass in the URI from Flickr with some parameters. That's an asynchronous call, so I simply have to use the await on top of that. That will block my thread until the response is ready. The response is coming in the form of an HTTP response message, and then I can read out using the read as string async. Doesn't matter what that's doing. Basically, what I'm then doing is this is XML that's coming in. I'm going to use link to XML to parse that into objects that I can continue to work with.
Okay, up to me again. Well, in HTML, you have two possibilities. Everybody knows the XML HTTP request object, which allows you to ask data from a server. And on the other hand, you have WebSockets. But let me explain WebSockets in a minute. This is XML HTTP request, meaning that the client asks something from the server and the server gives something back. I know that this is the code where you're not going to give me points for, but imagine that you have jQuery, which is going to allow you to do this a lot easier. WebSockets is different because now you can keep your connection open, typically done for chat applications or games. So let me show you the code. I have a page here. And this is the code for the XML HTTP request object, which I'm directly going to skip. And I'm going to show you the code behind it. So that's the same here. Now, the cool thing is that you can choose between synchronous or asynchronous. Gilles just saved something. Synchronous or asynchronous by changing this to true or false. Again, this is not really nice code. But you can write that same code just by doing this. Hey, jQuery, give me some JSON. You can choose between XML and JSON. The cool thing about this, again, is that JavaScript is talking to JavaScript, which you don't need to use some link stuff to parse the things. The only problem with this is how do you know whether this code is done, yes or no? Well, what you can do is I can change that code a little bit and return the full object. The cool thing about this is that now you can write this code because, yeah, everybody's saying that await is so cool. This is basically the same. Get me the data, which is the same as await for it. And when you're done, execute this function. So this is pretty simple to do so. So when we're going to execute this code, it's all the same getting the code. I did not create a UI for it because I thought that it wasn't necessary to do that. But I have a better demo, which is this, which is a WebSockets. It's a chat client. I really like it. So let me start here, find the other one. Oh, apparently he's done. And this is there. This is a WebSockets, which means that you need to keep your connection open when you say hello. Oh, or here, where is it? Okay, hello there. Click OK. You see that automatically this little fellow is talking to the other little fellow, which is quite amazing. I can spend hours working on this, but I only have 3 minutes. But on the other hand, I'm done with it.
All right. We did both already. So scores for, what did we do first? SAML? Scores for SAML? This is going to be a difficult one, I think. Scores for HTML? Not very clear, in my opinion. I think this is actually a draw.
It's the same as 2 minutes ago.
No, I don't think so. Well, you get this one, but... I need to make sure that you're not cheating, right?
I'm not.
Let me restart.
Okay. Don't start yet.
No.
Data binding. Okay, data binding is basically preventing you of repeating the same task over and over again. And you don't want to see in your XAML or in your HTML, you don't want to go to JavaScript or C# and directly add values inside the markup. And if we can, and I say this for JavaScript, you need to support two-way binding as well. Okay, start.
There you go.
Okay, for HTML. Well, basically, it's very sad, but HTML does not know the concept of data binding. you have data, in terms of you have data, you want to bind it to the control. But, and that's the big advantage, which is really cool by web development, is some people who get bored at home think, oh, we need to help the other ones. We need to give them points. So they created a few JavaScript frameworks, and they're really good. I think of Knockout, Angular, Moustache, which is the best name for a JavaScript library. But depending on the framework, it could look different. So the first one is the XAML. No.
What did you do?
Nothing. Code.
You deleted your slides?
Yeah, I deleted my slides, which is not that bad. I have time. So let me go for data binding. Let's start with Moustache. First, run the code that you see what the solution needs to look like. Well, I'm using that same service, that memory service from before that gave me some data. And it's good. It took all the things that I did in my youth. I looked at MacGyver and so on and so on. So this is the service getting data. But how is the code? How does it look like when we take a look at Moustache? Well, basically, this is the part that I want to repeat. So for each image, I want to add an image with a paragraph, with some text. So what did I do? I grabbed the data with the await. When I have the data, just take that JSON data and change it into HTML, and then we're going to add that HTML into a memory wrapper, which we have over here. So all the data will be placed in there. And this is the template that it should use. Think of the data template in XAML. You define the template. This is the repeating part, and you need to provide poster here, description over there. Now to show you a little bit more advanced, you can use Knockout. To show you the demo, it's exactly the same page, but with that difference that on top, I'm showing that I have 16 memories and I have a button to add a new memory. You see that there is some space here to add a new thing, which I'm going to do by clicking on that button. But before I'm going to do that, let me show you that code. Well, Knockout is an MVVM, so I need to create a view model, yes, in JavaScript, which is going to get my data. I'm really going to make a JavaScript array out of it. And then I'm going to make it observable. Think of the observable collection in .NET that implements the iNotify property changed. So from the moment that I click on the add memory button, I'm going to add a new memory into that observable array. And then when I run that, see 16, without refresh, it becomes 17. If we take a look at the bottom, you see that data binding, two-way data binding, is possible in HTML and JavaScript.
All right. Switching, thank you. So Kevin referred a lot to XAML, so that's probably because he already knows that we're going to win this one. Are you ready? Yeah. All right.
You were so impressed about my demo, so...
Yeah, now you have to reset my score. Data binding in XAML, well, it's basically the same thing. You have a data source, an object, an in-memory data object, and we're going to bind to that object from a UI control. So basically, you have a source for your binding and a target for your binding. It's a very simple model in XAML. It's a very loosely coupled model. We already had data binding in many other Microsoft technologies, but they were less loosely coupled than what we have in XAML. So how does it work in XAML? As mentioned, you have your data binding engine sitting in between. You have an object of data, the data source sitting on one hand. You can convert the data values coming back from that data source into the properties that you're going to bind to on your UI control. The syntax is using so-called markup extensions. So you have a text box, for example, here. I'm going to bind a property name to the text property of that text box. I am missing one thing here in this line of code. I'm missing where the data should be coming from. So the data is actually, the data source is not specified. So you can do that in a couple of ways. One way is directly specifying the source, which in that case is then a XAML-defined object, like you see here at the top. That's very rarely used. Sometimes you use it in MVVM. But most often, you will use the so-called data context. The data context allows you to define an entire grid of controls with just one data parent. And inside of that parent, you can define all kinds of data binding syntax, like you see here for that text box. And at the parent level, we define the data context as being the data source for all the child controls. Of course, we have also the different ways for doing the binding. There's different modes for binding, a one-way, a two-way, and a one-time binding. So it's possible to change the value that is coming from the source in the UI one time. When the source changes and the UI needs to be updated, then you need to use a one-way binding. And if you also allow the users to edit the values in the UI, then you're going to push back those values using a two-way binding. For this to work, your objects need to implement a couple of interfaces. For single objects, it's the iNotify property changed that will make XAML aware of a value changing in the background. If you have collections of objects, then we will use the observable collection. Let's take a look at this in the demo. For this case, I'm using a Silverlight because data binding is pretty much the same in all XAML technologies. So on your left here, we have a UI grid that is showing, let's say, a profile of a user. When I click on Edit Details, and I'm going to change the value of the last name here, tabbing out of it, you see that the value is automatically changing here as well. This is a two-way binding at work here. Also notice that we have a list of so-called account activities, so things happening on your account, and it will update every now and then with live data coming back from an observable collection. So how is this working? So we have all kinds of data binding statements in here. So these are the text blocks that you saw on the left, where we had a text being bound to owner ID, first name, last name, and so on. Am I already over time?
That's a point for me.
Not so fast. So, but yeah, okay. We win that anyway. let's let the audience decide. So data binding in XAML. Yeah, so I didn't even have to use my 3 minutes for that one. All right. Now you're annoyed, right?
No, I'm not.
No, you're not.
My
All right.
Things are coming.
Like object orientation. what round are we at now? Seven, I think. I missed a round here. All right. Seven, eh? Yeah. Audio and video. All right. Audio and video. The requirements are simple. Make it easy to include a way to play back audio and video. Give support for common formats. And give support for DRM. Let's go. So in XAML, things are solved really easy with just one element, the so-called media element, which allows me to load on demand, so progressive download or streaming content. We simply point to a manifest file, and that will allow us to download chunks and in this way implement a streaming player. We have support for all kinds of types of files. For audio, the common formats like MP3, WAV files are supported. For video, we have support for MP4, WMV, OGG video. So all the common formats are supported. They're supported on each platform, so there's no places where one format is not going to work or not. We also have support for scrubbing, so we can actually move the marker, so the progress bar, to a point in time. And there's also support for markers inside of the video, so you can actually sync a file with your media file and for that use markers, and that can be used, for example, for subtitling. There's also support for DRM in XAML, so Windows 8, Windows Phone, even Silverlight has support for DRM. Microsoft has released a couple of packages for that. The Player Framework, Play Ready Client, and the Smooth Streaming SDK are your places to look if you want to implement a DRM-protected stream in each XAML technology. So let me open my demo first already. There we go. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to first show you a basically a progressive download with the media element. So I'm going to open a media file here. There we go. No, don't go to OneDrive. Why did he reset himself? There we go. Travel videos. This is costing me a lot of time. Let's open it. Unsupported. That's not good.
Was everything supported or?
Yeah, there we go. So now it's starting the video playback. So this is the media element out of the box playing, even if the stream was to be DRM protected. So the media element is a very simple control. As you saw, we had controls. That's by enabling the transport controls. And it has a full API if you need to access the playback rate, the stretch properties, the stop, of course, pause, and all these things are implemented on the media element.
Done?
I'm done. Are you switching? Yeah. Did you switch?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go.
Okay, so audio and video are already available for years, even longer that XAML existed. Think of YouTube and so on. But it was kind of difficult. You had to write quite a lot of things to get the video up and running. But it has been made easier, which means that now you have an element, an audio element, a video element. And you can provide pretty much all the same settings, properties that Gilles just showed. Okay, he mentioned the codecs, but it has been solved quite nicely as well. But I'm going to change my slide a little bit.
Even on Apple.
Which means that the media element cannot do that. Okay, if you want to control that, with JavaScript, it's also fairly simple. You can pause the video, you can play the video, and so on. The only thing that you need to do is use the document.getElementById to grab that video or audio, and you're good to go. So let me switch back to the other mic. Okay, we have that here. So that's how simple the database basically is. You create a video element. You can specify the controls. So what you see right here is that I have controls. I can play that video without any problem. If you don't want to have the controls, just remove the controls option. Then you don't have the controls, and then you need to write it in JavaScript. If you want to automatically start playing your video, you can do that as well. Add the autoplay attribute to it, and it starts playing. Let me get the controls back. And this is the poster. In a lot of videos, the first frame is a black frame. This is not something that you want to show to your people, so you can provide an image that will be used as the image as long as your video is not playing, which is a very big advantage. If your browser does not support the video tag, you can have a fallback in Silverlight or in Flash, whatever you'd like.
In Silverlight, oh, that's cool.
yeah, but it's a fallback.
Mm-hmm. Because we support it.
But not on an iPhone. Not even on the Windows Phone?
No, sorry.
Okay, so let's play audio as well. It's about the same. Yeah, I know that I needed to play that video because it was kind of cool. You see, audio. It's exactly the same, except for the fact that it doesn't have a UI. Okay, the last thing is, how do you control it with JavaScript? Well, I have the same video, and I'm going to grab the video here. I grab the Canvas 2D, and when the video starts playing, I'm going to create every second and a half a screenshot of that image, which is pretty cool because, again, you can reach every pixel, you can talk to every pixel in the video. So let me start it. And every second and a half, I will take that snapshot of that video just by using JavaScript in combination with the Canvas, so which is also a good, a very big advantage.
All right. So first channel, I think we did first channel. Right?
Yeah,
we did channel first. Okay, I think we might just still win, but.
This is not a pointer. I scratched it.
Then we lost the round because we're already at round 8.
I have 5 points. No.
I think you're cheating a bit. Yeah, sometimes technologies need to cheat to become well accepted.
But that's what we call developers workarounds. Yeah. We do it every day. Controls. Can you please?
Oh, start? Sorry. So reset. There we go. Okay. Start.
Okay.
Oh no, not starting yet. Oh, sorry.
You have to do the requirements, of course. Okay, controls, what do you want to have? A tooling, Visual Studio, whatever you like, and basically have a lot of controls in your on your applications. Built-in controls, advanced controls, custom controls, and so on. So let's get started. HTML, well, basically HTML has controls, the text box and so on. I don't really call them a rich set of controls, but they're built in. Now, the cool thing with these things is that with HTML5, you have a set of new controls, like the progress, the calendar, the date picker, but they do not always work in all browsers, which I know is a disadvantage. But the power of controls here is that you can get help from everybody in the world, because a lot of people know HTML and JavaScript, and you can find really cool controls on for your desktop web application, but also for mobile phones and so on. And there's a really cool website, which is codepen.io, where you can have the HTML, the CSS, and JavaScript, and it's totally for free. So here you see an example of a toggle button that you can use. I have an example of checkboxes as well. So that's a big advantage here. If you have the money, you can, there's some are for free, but if you want to have advanced controls, you can, for example, use jQuery UI or Kendo UI as well. So let me go back to the demo. Go to controls, which is sitting in round 8. Now it makes sense. I have 4, you have 3. 4 plus 3 is 7.
Yeah, I was mistaken.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create an input type as text. I know every language should have a text box, which is normal, but you can easily add a placeholder without writing, doing some data binding stuff or some code behind first name, and then you have a text box. You can make it directly required. You can have patterns in it as well. So where you can say it should only contain numbers or minimum 3 letters. So these are features that you can add. If I, for example, change that into a range, run it, then you have a slider. If we change that to progress control, these are built in progress. I'm losing time. Control enter. Then you have the progress control. This is the indeterminate control, but you can also specify values. To show you, for example, codepen.io, this is a cool touch menu. When you click on it, it gives you several options. You go away, or you click on it again, they removed. With jQuery UI, you can add features as well that will run in all browsers on all devices too. And I also have some cool controls, for example, here with the free HTML, CSS, and JavaScript in there. So these are a bunch of buttons that you can use, or a gallery of buttons when you can click through them. You also have another gallery. And imagine how much time that you have to spend doing these things yourself, but you can download them. And some buttons with images therein too. So they're not the normal buttons. You can do whatever you want with these HTML buttons. And that is the big advantage of HTML for controls in HTML.
Nice downtime.
As always.
Okay, no comment there. So let's go in XAML. In XAML, basically, we have a very rich control set built in every XAML technology. I took a little screenshot of the toolbox in my Visual Studio. I think it is for Silverlight. I couldn't fit it on one page. So that's how many controls we get out of the box. Of course, we have common controls built into every XAML technology that work in the exact same way in all XAML technologies. Password boxes, sliders, progress bars, date pickers, and so on. We don't have to download anything for that. Content controls are a very big deal in XAML. So basically, it is possible to nest all kinds of controls into each other. So example, you have a button. In a button, in some technologies, you can only place a text. But we in XAML, we can actually nest controls in other controls. For example, it's very easy to make this image button. By simply adding the content or specifying the content of this button to be a stack panel, and from there building another visual tree, we can nest as much controls as we want into each other. It's even possible to play a video inside of a button, should you want that. Out of the box possible. There are many list controls as well. List controls are inheriting from items control, and it's very easy to make list controls such as the list box, the comma box, many other controls such as the tab control and the data grid, which is available in Silverlight, not in Windows Phone, are also inheriting from list controls. That's this. But also, another very important thing that we have in XAML is the ability to template controls. So if you're not happy with the default look of a control, simply remove the skin of that control and plug in another one without having to write any code. So what you're going to do is change the look and feel of that control, but you're not going to change the behavior. A skinned or a templated button still remains a button. Let me show you that in a demo. So that's this one. So first, I'm going to show you a couple of the built-in controls. Let me zoom in on that a little bit. So these are a couple of built-in controls in Windows 8. So you have, of course, the button, a search control. So this is actually a button where you can a box where you can search, a combo box, a date picker. This is a checkbox, a progress bar. All these things are built-in and are, of course, native in the language. So you don't have to do anything for that. So they're all built-in controls into the language. We don't have to download anything specific for that. But if you're not happy with how, for example, a checkbox looks, well, simply remove the skin from that control and redefine your own template. So what we have here is a checkbox that I've retemplated, and it still works like a checkbox. So I can check it, I can make it indeterminate, I can uncheck it. So it still works like a checkbox, but it has an entirely different UI. This is built into the platform. Nothing special going on. This is possible with each and every control. All right. The votes for it was HTML first. XAML. And we're back to 4-4. You don't see the difference, yeah. All right. The next one is mine to start, I think. And we should end right on time, actually, which is very good. So the next round is it's called some OO. And the OO is meant for JavaScript. So basically, the requirement is very simple. Support classes, interface, inheritance, and polymorphism. We can start the clock, thank you. So for XAML, I think this is really pretty simple to understand that this is all supported. We're having C# running behind the scenes, so all of this is supported. I don't think I have to explain that to you. But instead of just stopping here, I also wanted to show that XAML also is aware of polymorphism and other object-oriented principles. For example, we have the data template selector. A data template selector is a mechanism that allows XAML to switch between templates for UI controls, based on what type you're feeding it. I'm going to show you that. There's other things that are possible. Implicit data templates. That's basically a template that you attach to a particular type. And when it needs to visualize that type, it will automatically use that data template. And also, the data binding properties are also going to look at the objects that sit behind it for when you specify specific properties on the binding. So no more slides. Let's go to a demo. Did I have it open already? Yeah. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show a very ugly data template selector. I don't need fancy demos to make my point here. So this is actually a data template. Notice that I have a list view here, I think. And based on the type that I'm feeding it, I can actually, it's going to visualize my item differently. Because XAML is actually aware of what I'm feeding it. So let me show you that in code. So I have this class called data template selector, which is inheriting from the base data template selector. And in here, I define a couple of different properties for each template that I'm going to have. I'm going to feed into this data template an item. And that item is going to be a person. Person can be inherited in employee and in manager. So basically, I'm going to feed a list of observable, an observable collection of persons. So that's my data template selector. In the main page, I'm going to, In the main page, I'm going to define different data templates. This one is called person template, this one is called employee template, and this one is called manager template. Each have a different background color and some other XAML properties as well. And then I'm instantiating my data template selector. And in there, I define or I link basically my properties of my data template selector with all my data templates. And then I have a list view, and that list view is pointing to that data template selector. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to simply feed to that list view an observable collection of persons that contains persons, employees inherit from person, and I'm going to, and I'm also going to feed it one manager, which is inheriting from employee. So based on the type that, that it needs to visualize, XAML is going to pick the different data template. So XAML is well aware of object orientation. Your turn. I need to switch back 1 second. Six and restart. Go.
Okay, so I need to introduce some OO in HTML and in basically in JavaScript instead of C Sharp. We're going to use JavaScript, but it is possible. It is possible, although that a lot of people say, okay, we're faking it, but it's possible. And the first time that Jill looked at this code, that was his reaction. But it is.
It is
possible.
Still my reaction, by the way.
It still is
it
his
is
reaction.
Still my reaction.
But I'm going to go away from this. I'm going to step away from that because there are some other solutions for it. You can use TypeScript. You can use CoffeeScript if you want to add some classes, interfaces, if you like, in JavaScript too. So that again, it's the community. It's in this first CoffeeScript is community. TypeScript is Microsoft, who makes JavaScript a lot more nicer to work in. Although a lot of people say that, okay, JavaScript, we don't need OO, we can do pretty much everything in there. What I already did, I created a TypeScript file. And like in Less and CSS, I'm going to write the TypeScript on the left, and it's going to compile it into JavaScript at the right. So let's start with an interface, I license to kill.
Is that personal?
Yeah. So let's create an enemy, and it should be type save enemy, which is of type string. Okay, let's then create a class, James Bond, which is going to have a private fields,
nice.
Name string, comma, private int or ID is of type number. We can create a constructor too. Yes, we can. Name, which is of type string. You don't have to write it. That's a cool thing. Just write whatever you like. ID.
That's what JavaScript is all about.
Yep. And that's the reason why it's the one of the only languages that you can use on each device. Constructor. This dot name is name. Oh, you have a this. Is that OO when you have a this?
No. Could be. Could be.
This dot ID is ID. How many? Much time? Okay, let's implement that interface. Implements I license. Oh, and IntelliSense, oh my God.
Do you know that? Wow.
Yeah, I didn't knew it. I just make it sound that it was something really cool. Type string, so let's start. Oops, losing time. Alert, killing, plus enemy. Okay, let's create a James Bond. Kevin is a new James Bond. Kevin 007. And then let's just kill. Ah, what did I do wrong? James Bond. Just assume that it worked well. Kill, shield, and now save that. What went wrong? Ah, yeah. That's you see how good it is. You have even type checking. I just wanted to point that out. So there you go. So OO in JavaScript, and I didn't even had to mention CoffeeScript.
All right. First in XAML.
Oh, cool.
HTML? No, not
but
so cool.
But there are a lot of people that are doubting.
Yeah. They like your demo more because you say that you're James Bond.
Or I kill you.
No, he killed me. Could be as well. Or maybe because of the animated GIF that you had.
Oh, yeah, I forgot something to say. Definitely if I would say
your time is up. Your time is up. Yeah, sure.
Okay, the last
round.
Round is testing, and it's now 5-4. Yeah, I'm just waiting. Support an easy way for unit testing and add some unit test frameworks. Okay.
Go.
So in HTML, again, we are going to make use of the community that added a lot of different testing frameworks for you, so that you can test your JavaScript or whatever. There are even some build systems like Grunt.js or Gulp.js where you could, for example, create nightly tests, nightly builds, and so on in JavaScript and HTML too. So a few of the frameworks, QUnit, Mocha, TestSwarm, Jasmine, Tutti, and so on and so on. I don't know how they sometimes come up with these names, but okay. There you go. Let me show that to you in a demo. It's going to be really quick. I have 2 minutes. Okay. Where's the testing here? Index.html. Run that page. So I took one thing. Woohoo. Do you know where the woohoo came from? Where does it come from? That's pretty cool.
You don't know either.
That's JavaScript. Always polite. Memories. It was done. When I have my data, alert woohoo. Safe.
Was your unit test not supposed to catch
it? No, I thought at this point in time that I had so many points that I would win. So therefore, they had woohoo already. Okay. So with JavaScript, what you do is, like in C# or whatever, you use test methods exactly the same here. You have a test function. And let me just do a few checks here. And this is a control that you can download and install, and it's again for free. So the first test that I'm going to do is null exactly the same as undefined, and you'll see that this is true. Null is the same as undefined, but this is of course not when you use the strictly equality operator. Do you have that in C#? No. And which means that null is not the same as undefined. So this is what you always should use. Always use the strictly equality operator. Then, for example, some more tests. So what you basically do, like in C#, it's the same. You are going to compare the thing that you have a result from a function with the thing that you expect. So is null the same as undefined? You expect true and so on, because this is the strictly equality operator. You can, of course, also ask information from other functions. So I'm going to check if things are even, yes or no. So this is basically that test here is even. So the text that you see here is even is coming from here. Test is even. There's a function. And I'm going to check is zero even. Execute this function. If it's OK, it will be green. If it's not OK, it will be red. So 0 and 2 are green. And of course, 5 is red in this case. Then the last one, and this is where the data woohoo came from, is, yeah, it worked. Yeah, my 3 minutes are done. So there is data available. The length is bigger than 0, so test succeeded.
All right. We have 5 minutes left, so I have 3 minutes, and then we can do the counting of the scores. So can we switch? All right. So in XAML, things are a bit different again, depending on the technology. One problem that JavaScript
I'm
had.
I'm comparing only one
is,
technology.
the problem that JavaScript has is that it is very hard to integrate those unit tests with the build process. It's very hard to integrate that with your build server. That same problem is also, please don't touch my machine, is also the same when you look at Silverlight. It is only possible in a supported way to actually do that inside of the browser. When you're looking at Windows 8, Windows Phone, it is actually possible to do a full unit testing scenarios. You can integrate it with your build process. It is actually supporting the Microsoft build testing framework. Unit testing framework. So let me show these two approaches. Let me first show you Silverlight. So as mentioned, Silverlight also does it in browser, which is not really that optimal. So this is the Silverlight unit testing framework that is running. I only have one unit test here, but you saw that it's actually using the green light here, so it's all the tests are passing. But this is in browser. It's actually a Silverlight application that's running the unit test. Not possible to integrate this with the test runner. Let me show you Windows 8. Windows 8 has a unit testing template built into Visual Studio. I should actually not run it. I shouldn't have done that. Let me show you the code for this. I already have it open, by the way. So this is actually my unit testing class. So all the attributes that you know from regular unit testing. This is the Microsoft Visual Studio unit testing framework. Don't bother with that. It's actually supported. We can integrate this with a test runner. So that basically is all supported. What else did I want to show you here? Actually, yeah, that's all I wanted to show you here.
So?
Because it also works out of the box. So Windows 8, Windows Phone, all support full unit testing in the templates. That's it.
Yep.
All right, the last votes. So first HTML, and then XAML. Yeah. We're still on my machine.
I'm going home.
Yeah, you're going home. Yeah. So, can you give me the final scores, Kevin?
No.
I think that's
it's 6-4.
6-4. So 6-4 for XAML. It's not about the scores actually. I think that the cool thing that what you wanted to show here is that the two technologies actually support a very similar feature set. And the whole war between JavaScript and XAML should not be a war, because the two technologies really allow you to build capable applications with all the things that we've shown here. So I think we're still friends?
Yes, we are.
We are? OK. So I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for joining.